You know, so often we talk about and prepare for problems with the airplane. Oh, so rarely do we talk about problems with the pilot. And yet, that's really what this scenario is about. And Catherine, you're picking a destination that's not immediately below, but isn't all the way to good VFR, which says to me you have a sense that the urgency of the situation is high, but not off the charts. Yet, all the way to Cross City, you're going to be thinking about the fact that you could become incapacitated before this airplane gets on the ground. If this is food poisoning, things are about to get much worse in a few potential different ways. So, how does that thought in your head affect your performance and decision making? Does it affect it at all? Does it change things? Or do you just have to put it aside? How are you going to deal with that?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's going to involve constantly assessing my own abilities to see how much of an emergency this is. I mean, obviously, if incapacitation is somehow on the table, then getting a Jack Center to help me descend through the clouds and maybe landing at Cedar Key makes sense. If I really feel like I need to get on the ground ASAP and then I'll worry about the services later. But, you know, Cross City is only 30 nautical miles to the north of Cedar Key. Spiraling down, especially with the idea that incapacitation could be an issue, you know, makes that even less attractive, the idea of spiraling through clouds. So, given that I'm going to descend in the most stable way that I possibly can, it could be that I'd be a good part of the way to Cross City anyway. So my plan would be to go to Cross City if I really feel like incapacitation is something that is going to be on the table very soon. Then turning back to Cedar Key would make some sense. But you know, my own experience with these kinds of issues, have I had food poisoning that much? No, a handful of times. I believe that Cross City would be the good choice because I don't think you get to that stage, you know, super quick.
And there are two other people at the table who are with you in this middle zone, but I want to look at the extremities for a second. John, you're spiraling down right now. How much of that is because you believe I've got to get down right now? It's about urgency. And how much of that is a factor of no, that's just the best choice in this scenario, is just get on the ground for everybody's sake. How much are you worried about you, and how much are you worried about everybody, I guess.
So it's the second half of your question. It's the closest place. The one thing I am not doing with the asterisk is spiraling down. I'm just going to descend straight ahead, much the same as you would have to do when you go to Cross City and you're still in the clouds. You're instrument rated. You've got a digital attitude indicator. It's a fairly slow airplane, stable. There's not a lot of turbulence. I would find a heading along the shoreline so that when I break out, I've got the shoreline off my side, so I'm not breaking out over the water with the possible disorientation there. The one thing I wouldn't do though is as I said, is spiral. It's only 4 miles away. It's concrete. I'm on the ground in a couple of minutes. I've been to Cedar Key. I've ridden in Judy's van. I mean, I know, and her van, it's a little sketchy, but she's a good person. She's a really good person. They have a fire department, an EMS. I would probably tell Jacksonville Center what I'm doing, request assistance when I get on the ground. And they could have people waiting there in case it is a medical issue rather than the food poisoning. I just don't see any point to continuing on to Cross City or any of the other places. Jacksonville Center can do nothing for you at this point. The MVAs in the area are probably in the 2,000-foot range, so all they're going to give you is a heading and a minimum altitude, which is not going to really do anything for you. You're going to wind up vectoring yourself to the airport. You've got more information than they have with the GPS and everything in front of you. So just get it down and then ask for a garden hose to clean it out.
You know, let me stay with you, John, because
Sure.
two things right there.
Okay.
You're choosing one with an asterisk, not two with an asterisk. So why are you not contacting Jack Center at all? Saying, I'm landing at Cross City and I'm going to need EMS when I get there.
Okay. So one asterisk, two asterisk. at some point, I would assume that you're already talking to Jack Center for flight following mm-hmm. as you're coming here. So you just tell them, I've got a sick passenger. I'm landing at Cedar Key. Declare an emergency. And I'm switching over to the CTAF. See ya.
You said that they really can't help you, and I wanted to clarify what you said. Can they not help you at Cedar Key? Can they not help you at Cedar Key? And they also can't really help you at Cross City.
The help that they can give is very limited. Already know the vector to the airport. You've got ForeFlight and you've got a GPS. What more can they give you?
Yeah,
asking a question there. Yeah. So all they're going to say is fly heading 360. Descend to whatever the MVA is, and that's not going to help you break out. You're still going to be on top at that point. So you're going to have to continue the descent one way or another, either through clouds or maybe you could weave and bob a little bit to find a hole, depending upon how broken it is. But for the most part, they're really not going to be able to do very much other than provide assistance. Chances of an IFR airplane being below you in that area are pretty slim. But they could make sure that there's no other traffic around.
JP, you're going on the other side of the spectrum here. You're going to just keep going all the way to Perry Foley. What's the thinking behind that?
Yeah, the thinking behind that, this is kind of my home territory. Grew up in Florida, been to all of those airports. And I have also ridden with Judy and her dog into Cedar Key. Cedar Key is a little fishing village. I mean, there's not a whole lot there. There is EMS. There's a fire department. My thinking on continuing to Perry Foley is, and I say that with a little bit of a caveat, certainly if we saw the conditions of the passenger or we even started to notice something ourselves, we would modify that plan. Perry Foley is VFR. In addition, just from knowing the area, there's actually a hospital in Perry, Florida. So that is something to consider just in case this passenger is more than air sick. So watching that, and I think geographically, it's just not that much farther. I know it kind of depends on your condition of your stomach and dealing with what's going on in the cabin there. But I would continue on because of that. It's an easy VFR landing. If conditions got worse, my backup plan would be certainly to go into Cross City.
So it's kind of a five asterisk thing, you know, five, as long as the pilot is well and just keep giving bags to the passenger. And, you know, that's just the way it goes. Yeah, go ahead.
And and Catherine mentioned this as well. When somebody has this kind of illness, say if we're worried about pilot incapacitation, it's not like it's a cardiac event. I mean, this kind of doesn't mm-hmm. come on just like that. It takes a little bit. You kind of know if you're heading in that direction as well.
Yeah, and I want to get back to that about other things, because that's really the grander thing in this scenario is pilot incapacitation. But let's stay on the choices for just a moment. Tom, you and Wally both are choosing three. No asterisks or slash. You're not going into the clouds in this airplane, it sounds like. Tell me something about that.
Well, if decades of aviation movies have taught us nothing else, they've told us never eat the fish. And I'm concerned that and I'm concerned that there seems to be an implication in the scenario that the pilot may be potentially suffering from food poisoning as well. And that being the case, I'm going to try to stay out of the clouds as much as possible. Now, I would contact Jacksonville, but I would like to aim for a hole in the clouds. And, you know, if I have to exercise emergency authority and brush a little bit of IMC on the way down, that's fine. But I try to stay visual here as much as possible, with the concern that if I start to experience symptoms of food poisoning, I don't want to be in IMC even for a short period of time while I'm doing it. Pilots don't have a good history of hand flying in instrument conditions when they're not on top of their game. And that was my concern.
Wally, is your thinking similar to that, or is there another factor that you're bringing in?
Well, it's similar to what Tom said. You know, I'm going to go to what's it called? Not Cedar Key, but
Cross City.
Cross City. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go to Cross City because I think there's a lot better facilities there, perhaps just to clean me up and to clean up our airplane when we get there. And, you know, food poisoning is certainly going to be a terrible distraction if the pilot becomes affected by it, but it's not like a heart attack. It's an annoyance to me. So I don't consider it a terrible emergency. If I came down with the food poisoning, sure, I might have to find a bag of my own or use the window, but the airplane's not going to go on uncontrolled. I can still fly it. I would try to do it VFR because, as John pointed out, pretty much all Jack's Center is going to do is give you heading and give you their minimum vectoring altitude. And that may not be enough to get you out of the clouds anyway. And it's kind of my experience often in Florida. We don't know exactly in this case, but rather than spiraling down between the clouds, you can usually sort of S-turn your way around and dodging the clouds left and right. And that's going to be smoother. If Jax gives you a heading and it's going to push you into those cumulus clouds, it's just going to be a heck of a lot rougher. And you're going to have to fly IFR. I'd try to stay VFR as much as I could.
Catherine did make that point that, you know, obviously a big hole in the clouds, well, you're certainly going to take that. But the preference is maneuvering, wings level descent on instruments, going with wings level descent on instruments. Catherine's nodding. David, you are also in that category of preferring a wings level descent on instruments, even in a non-IFR airplane with just one attitude display and nothing else. Given that you aren't going to get much more, as John pointed out, than like the airports ahead of you, you're on your own, you're below the minimum vectoring altitudes. Why is that preferable? Why is it preferable for a wings level descent into the miasma, knowing that you might get sick? And you're certainly distracted by the smell and your sick passenger.
Well, one advantage is you're starting from VMC conditions, right? So you can get the airplane trimmed out and you basically don't even, you can let go of the stick, right? Just use the rudder pedals to keep the airplane pointed more or less in a straight direction. It'll just chug along quite nicely down the clouds. I think one of the things where you see well represented in the accident statistics is something bad starts to happen, and then there's a whole bunch of rapid maneuvering with a distracted pilot not paying attention, and the airplane stalls and spins or does something as well. And so to me, this is a setup, especially for the spiral dive, right? You crank it around, you've got lots of forces on you, you pop out, you're frantically looking for the airport that you know is just right around the corner, and you stop paying attention to the airplane, and you have a bad outcome. So this is a case where you literally and metaphorically take the deep breath, keep everything nice and stable, and just let the airplane descend. But you do want to get VFR. You don't want to be on top because that's where your options are. So that's what appealed to me. Of course, without knowing how you feel, I was going by the assumption that you don't feel sick other than being made sick by the other guy puking. Right. So, you know, if you have, you know, massive gut cramps or something, well, that's a different story. So that was kind of my outlook. I discounted the food poisoning and more just a situation where, you know, it's now not very much FUD for either of us. And, you know, we want to get on the ground.
Yeah. And perhaps that's a red herring, or perhaps it's a red herring that's gone bad. I mean, we just don't know that detail yet. But seriously speaking here, David, you are counting on this single instrument. And I mean, really, what are the chances that, you know, somebody getting sick again like you might actually obscure that instrument in the airplane?
The worst day of my entire professional flying career was early in my career. I was a single pilot in a Navajo. It was a high density, so 9 passengers, all people crammed in. We're fortunately only about 15 minutes from home base. I was in the cloud. It was quite bumpy, so I was hand flying because the autopilot didn't do very well. And the guy sitting right behind me leans over my right shoulder and tells me he's not feeling well, and then projectile vomits over my shoulder, arm, right hand, some splatters on the instrument panel. So the first thing I had to do was use my left arm and sleeve to clean the guy's lutch off the attitude indicator so I could still fly the airplane. But, you know, vomit stories are a staple of bad pilot comedians. But I'll tell you, what I ended up doing is I immediately told ATC what had happened, and they gave me minimum distance vectors to a short gate ILS to intercept above the glide slope. And the gear and flaps didn't come down until I was below the 800-foot deck. So I was like 160 knots. So looking back, I mean, flight safety was significantly reduced all the way down the line because I was so desperate to get on the ground. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it all worked out fine, but this is an emergency. Like, and the, you know, the tendency or the desire to get on the ground right away is something that matters. And, you know, other scenarios here have examples where potentially rushing is the worst thing you could do. So I kind of put that in the same category. And it was $2,000 to clean up the airplane because everyone else in the airplane was sick by the time we got on the ground.
Yeah, that thing definitely, that can be catching as it goes around. But there was a story that was published not that long ago about a first officer who got sick into the FMS. And it was like an ACARS report, and they couldn't program the FMS. So it's one of those things where we don't talk about the potential, your instruments, if you're IMC, if they were to become impacted, pardon the pun, in some way by someone being sick in the airplane, you have a multi-point failure, kind of a multiple emergency. JP, you had a comment.
Yeah, I think this is a little ironic because this is in an area that I had a bit of an issue. I was flying with my wife, and we're going down from Birmingham to my mom's house in Central Florida. And routinely, it would be Perry Foley, it would be over Cross City, and then down through the Lakeland area to get down to where she lives. So we're just north of Perry Foley. This is before I even had an instrument rating. We're VFR. We're over the tops of the clouds. I'm talking to Jacksonville on flight following, or maybe Tallahassee approach. And all of a sudden, I don't know what I had eaten or what was going on. I had to go to the bathroom now. And it was like now. And I said, Perry Foley. And I found a hole in the clouds. And the last thing I remember my wife telling me, I know you've got to go to the bathroom, but please don't kill us. That was the last thing she said. So, you know, sometimes that pilot incapacitation, it could be something as simple as, you know, I wasn't necessarily ill, but whatever was not agreeing with my system, we needed to take care of that in pretty immediate fashion.
We're going to need a trigger warning on this round table for people, you know, beware, there are discussions going on in here that are somewhat personal in nature, but it's a real thing, and we don't talk about this kind of thing enough in many ways. John.
Yeah, so it's changed direction a little bit. I wanted to talk about and see what other people's thoughts are with your responsibility as pilot in command to your passengers. You know, we take them up and you could be, you know, 10,000 feet cruising along on top of clouds or whatever. They have no options. They can't get out and walk away. If a medical thing happens, if anything happens, we don't really think about that very much, at least for private pilots. I think, you know, as professional pilots, you do more because you've got a paying passengers in the back and you're thinking of their safety. But we take that kind of casually. And there is a tremendous amount of responsibility that we take on whenever we close the door on one of our passengers, because we're their only lifeline now to get back to the ground. I was just wondering what other people's thoughts were on that.
Tom and then David.
Well, to John's question about our responsibility to passengers, I've actually got a presentation I've given many times where I have some slides that show this. But for most general aviation pilots, if you ask them, what does it mean to be a pilot or what signifies being a pilot, they'll hold up a plastic certificate. This is what I've got. This is my certificate. But the passengers, if they're especially if they're not very, very familiar with the flying operation, the passengers are going to expect that the pilot in command of the airplane is going to exercise the same level of judgment and skill as a senior captain flying a 777 across the Pacific. And so our role is to try to live up to that expectation. They trust us implicitly. It's just amazing anybody would trust someone to take them up in an airplane But they do. And so I agree with where I think John was going, is that we need to remember that we have to exercise a great deal, or we have a great deal of responsibility, and we have to live up to that when we carry passengers.
And I really appreciated that in Catherine's response on this scenario about paying attention to the passengers and knowing the mnemonics, the acronyms, the signs, however you want, for being able to pick up on that, because a lot of times people are even afraid to distract you in any way. They don't know necessarily what are the safe things to say or do or when to say it. And it may require you giving them permission or really soliciting it. Catherine.
Yeah, I have to echo that. It's funny, you know, if you fall down and, you know, hurt your leg, nobody has a problem saying that I've hurt my leg or something like that. But for whatever reason, nausea is something about which people are ashamed. And so they are loath to admit that they are sick until the very last minute. So yeah, knowing those signs is really important to, you know, keep them comfortable and the flight safe.
David, you had something.
I was just going to say, I think one area of flight training never really addresses, but probably should, is what can you as a pilot do to make the ride better for your passenger? So, you know, if it's bumpy, you should be looking for a smoother altitude. If you have a passenger, particularly new ones, you know, keep the bank angle down and the roll rate slow. And so I think a lot of these maybe style points aren't really raised, and people learn it the hard way. So that's one thing I started to add. But really, this scenario at the end of the day is that the end result is a safe return to Earth. That's the only thing that matters.
You know, and I think, David, I'm glad you brought that up, because that really is one of the sort of overriding concepts in this scenario. It makes me think of your comment, JP, that, or your wife's comment, actually, like, don't kill us trying to get us on the ground here. And it makes me think of a discussion I had with Dr. Brent Blue, who some of you may be familiar with, where he says, you know, when it comes to serious medical emergencies, there may be a time as a pilot where your job is now to deliver the body to the ground. You really have to let go of being able to save the person, because they're either in a place you can't get to, or the medical issue is just too severe. There's no way you can deal with that in time. In this scenario, you know, the tune is not going to do that to anybody. But there are situations for sure. One other thing that Brent brought up, and I wanted to bring it into the discussion and see what people thought, cardiac events and things like that usually, more often than not, don't happen suddenly. They happen over the course of not just minutes, but hours or even days. And, you know, I don't feel so great, but I'm going to get the rest of the way there and get home and that kind of thing. We don't talk about discontinuing a flight just because the pilot doesn't feel great or now feels even less great than they did before. And I see nods around the table there too. That's a difficult position to be in. Or if it's a passenger who, you know, they're not motion sick, but they're not great. Land now versus not. Tom, how do I decide between helping the passenger and not rushing my landing, especially if it was an instrument?
Well, something I've heard several times is one of the reasons that the airline safety record is so good is because they don't care whether you make it to grandma's house today. They fly the airplane first, they deal with everything else second. And we do have a responsibility to our passengers, and that responsibility includes saying, I'm going to get you down as soon as I safely can get you down. That's the best thing I can do for you. Like I said, they're expecting you as pilot in command to exercise the same judgment and experience as a 777 captain, and that's, you would have to do that. My son is a paramedic. He's been called out by air traffic control to local airports a couple of times to respond to an airplane in distress. That's the best you can do, is get them down as quickly but as safely as possible, so somebody who has the capacity to help them better can take care of them.
Wally.
Yeah, a tool that the airlines have and came available about halfway through my career. So it wasn't always there, but you've got an airplane full of a couple hundred people, and some of them are sneezing and some of them are seriously ill, and perhaps one of them is having a heart attack. And the decision that it's the same decision for us general aviation pilots. Should I land immediately? Perhaps I should land in the field and get the person out. Should I land at this little podunk airport where I have to ride in Judy's van to get to a hospital, or should I fly another 20 minutes to get to an airport with some facilities? But the airlines in recent times all, I think, subscribe to a medical service wherein we could contact a physician on the radio and provide the physician with whatever symptoms we could provide. Sometimes if we had a doctor on board, we could give them a lot of symptoms, blood pressures, respiration rates, those things. Sometimes it was just whatever we could provide. And that medically trained expert then could provide good advice to a pilot and to either say, you need to land immediately, give them a 2 aspirin and a glass of water and continue for on and see what happens. So it took a great deal of the responsibility off of a captain to make that decision. And as general aviation pilots, we typically don't have that service. So it's all on us.
Yeah. Catherine.
I was going to offer that, you know, sometimes being flexible, you know, in some of these decisions makes some sense. You know, sometimes getting on the ground ASAP is what we want to do. I had an interesting experience years ago when my kids were very small and we were flying over to Charleston. And, you know, I was the only pilot on board. I was the only adult on board. And as I was descending, I had just a piercing headache. I just could barely see straight. And I realized they had descended me too quickly. And I must have had some sort of a residual cold or something, but my sinuses just couldn't keep up with that descent. And so for me, the answer was flying longer. I asked him for a climb, an immediate climb. And then a more gradual descent into the airport. So, you know, considering these scenarios in advance, you know, the answer sometimes is to get on the ground sooner. Sometimes it's actually to fly longer.
Several people have brought up asking other people for help. Tom, you brought up, you know, your son being called out for an EMS response. Wally, you had brought up the service that you had. I'm going to ask you, John, how much can ATC help with a medical situation? Obviously getting you on the ground sooner, potentially helping you get to an airport, but just in terms of resources of getting a sense of, you know, how serious is this or what else can I do, or even where to go that's the best choice, and having people meet you on the ground, all those kinds of things. How much ability do they have there? What resources do they have?
Most of it is communication relay. You can talk to the controller on the radio. Then the controller can make a phone call. Unlike the airlines where they have a dedicated service that they can actually talk to a medical professional. I mean, it's a little side story. I remember one night years ago working radar. It's like 2:00 in the morning. And I got a call from an Army medevac helicopter that was bringing a critical patient to a hospital. They couldn't find the hospital. This is pre-GPS. So I had to vector him to the hospital. And then he says the patient's going into cardiac arrest and I have a phone number for you to call. So I'm on the phone with the ER doctor and he's asking all those same questions. And then he's telling me to relay to the pilot, to relay to the EMT in the back, administer this drug and do this kind of thing. So basically it was a communications relay. That's primarily what ATC can do, because you can't really talk to anybody on the ground while you're in the airplane and line up whatever resources they can. So it's, you know, more of an assistance in that way.
Does that go to, if you think you have a medical issue with someone on the airplane, just declaring an emergency right then, even if it's not too severe, just so you get that sort of undivided ATC attention in case something becomes more urgent? And yes, I need EMS to meet me on the ramp. This got much, much worse before we got there, that kind of thing.
Pretty much can never hurt to do that. And, you know, to go back to the very beginning of our discussion on this scenario, if you were talking to Jacksonville Center and you requested a vector or assistance or getting some there, you're pretty much either you or the controller is going to declare an emergency if they're going to vector a VFR aircraft into the clouds and try to get them down. So that's an emergency situation right there. You can't go wrong with that.
You know, we plan so much for the failures in the aircraft or systems, but like I said, we almost never consider the single point failure of us, the pilot, you know? And I think this scenario illustrates, you know, how a perfectly functional airplane on a perfectly flyable day can still be an emergency with potentially limited time to get on the ground. You know, and I just really hope that it's a reminder to us all to monitor our own human systems the way we monitor our aircraft systems and land before a manageable health issue turns really into an airborne health emergency.